Welcome to another Paul Hastings podcast. I'm here today with Scott Flicker, a partner in Paul Hastings' Washington, D.C. office and head of the firm's Global Trade Controls Practice. Today, we will be discussing the U.S. international trade agenda under President Obama in the second term. Good afternoon, Scott.
Hello, Melanie.
Well, what can companies expect from President Obama's second term in the international trade area?
Well, first and foremost, we can expect increasing focus on the use of economic sanctions as a tool of foreign policy, particularly as it pertains to Iran. Second, I think we can expect the administration to engage China more aggressively on free trade issues, while still looking for avenues of increased cooperation. And third, we can expect President Obama to use trade as a carrot to emerging democracies in the Middle East and Southeast Asia. And all of these issues will present challenges and opportunities for global companies over the next 4 years, I think.
Very interesting. So let's take Iran first. In its first 4 years, the Obama administration ratcheted up economic sanctions against Iran. Can we expect more of this in the second term?
I think it's safe to say yes. While not entirely free from controversy, the general consensus is that sanctions are working and have deterred Iran from moving closer to development of nuclear weapons. And there are several reasons why the sanctions have worked. First, the administration has focused hard on the banking and petroleum sectors, and these are two key sectors for Iran's economy. And second, the administration has, through diplomacy and, frankly, threats, convinced Iran's trading partners to join the effort. Thus, not only have we seen the EU, for example, ratchet up restrictions, with major European banks getting out of the business of handling Iranian accounts, and the EU banning trade on Iranian oil, but we've also seen countries like India and Turkey bear down on banking and trade with Iran, and Japan and Korea agree to reduce their imports of Iranian oil. And finally, the administration has stepped up enforcement with high-profile actions against name-brand non-U.S. financial institutions, including HSBC and Barclays, to name two. So these kinds of actions have had a significant deterrent effect, essentially chilling economic dealings between Iran and European and Asian counterparties, in particular banks.
So what next?
Well, much of the architecture that was put in place in the first term remains in place, and I expect what we'll see is more active enforcement as a tool of foreign policy here. One particular item of note is a statute called the Iran Threat Reduction and Syria Human Rights Act of 2012. This is a statute that was passed by Congress and signed into law last year, but with relatively little fanfare or attention. The act itself is broad-ranging. It covers many areas. But one provision, Section 218, is notable because what it does is essentially extend the current regime of Iran sanctions that previously were applicable only to U.S. companies and to U.S. citizens. And they now are going to cover foreign companies that are owned or controlled by U.S. parents. The administration implemented the provisions of Section 218 just 1 month prior to the election on October 9, and enforcement of this provision will likely begin in earnest in 2013, just after the presidential inauguration. So put simply, U.S. companies and U.S. executives will no longer be able to rely on separation between the U.S. operations and the overseas operations of companies that are under U.S. control. Now every foreign company with a U.S. parent will be obligated to adopt a U.S.-style compliance program when it comes to dealings with Iran. U.S. officials will also be watching the financial and petroleum sectors, the two sectors I mentioned before, and we can expect additional enforcement actions aimed at non-U.S. counterparties and intermediary parties in connection with Iran and these sectors. And no longer, therefore, will the focus remain on U.S. companies or U.S. financial institutions and U.S. investors. Even non-U.S. parties will need to be vigilant in engaging in trade or investment activities, even with non-Iranian companies, if those non-Iranian companies have significant business in Iran. So compliance programs need to be reviewed and they need to be strengthened. Due diligence takes on heightened importance, and solid reps and warranties in deal documents are all going to be important elements of ensuring compliance with this new phase of enforcement.
Very interesting. What about China? There was much talk during the election about who would be tougher on China. Will President Obama match some of that talk with action?
I have to say the real world is, of course, much more complex and more nuanced than the campaign trail. And that's especially true with the U.S.-China relationship in all of its dimensions. But when it comes to bilateral trade with China, there are certain realities. The trade deficit with China is about $300 billion annually, and it's growing. And with the U.S. economy still underperforming, and with President Obama frankly owing a debt of gratitude to the manufacturing belt for delivering him such a big margin of victory in the election, I think it's safe to say that the administration is going to face some pressure to focus on the sort of unfair business practice issues that industry and organized labor in the U.S. typically see as impeding their U.S. manufacturing capabilities in U.S. exports. And the president has a goal of doubling U.S. export trade worldwide, something that will absolutely require some cooperation from China. So there's a delicate balancing act here that the president will need to achieve between getting tough on China and ensuring cooperation with China. Since the fundamentals that created this big U.S.-China trade deficit are not going away, China still remains the world's factory floor, and U.S. consumers are going to continue buying Chinese goods, the most feasible way to reduce the trade deficit is to seek some rebalancing or revaluation of the Chinese currency relative to the dollar. And this would make Chinese goods relatively more expensive while reducing the price of U.S. exports. So I look to see the administration revisit this issue in the coming next 4 years.
Are there areas where the U.S. and China will cooperate on issues of trade?
Oh, absolutely. One good example is renewable energy. Instead of competing to be the green economy, the U.S. and China might look to join forces in some way. For example, with the U.S. developing the cutting-edge technologies for the next generation of green technologies, and China perfecting the often incredibly demanding processes of manufacturing green technology equipment, things like photovoltaic cells. One doesn't really need to look further than the Apple Foxconn example with the iPhone for a template on how to grow the whole pie through the introduction of leading technologies that create their own demand and they yield benefits for both parties in this kind of a relationship.
Mm. At the outset, you mentioned the emerging democracies of the Middle East and Southeast Asia. How might the administration's trade policies impact those countries in the second term?
I think quite a bit. A typical example here is Burma, also known as Myanmar. The military junta that ran Burma with an iron fist was a target of very severe U.S. economic sanctions for many, many years. Then came liberalization, social and political reform, ultimately culminating in the establishment of parliamentary elections that, while by no means perfect, were good enough to return, for example, Aung San Suu Kyi to the government. The Obama administration responded by provisionally easing and then ultimately lifting sanctions. Secretary of State Clinton led a delegation of leading U.S. companies, including GE, Coca-Cola, and the like, to the country to explore investment opportunities. And there's now active exploration of ways to move American investment and products into that market. President Obama is even planning a visit to the country, which I believe is the first by a sitting United States president. So this is a case where U.S. international trade policy appears to have been on the right side of history. And we are now advising U.S. clients on the opportunities and the traps involved in moving trade and investment into that region. Another example, perhaps more delicate, is Libya. As the attack on our embassy in Benghazi very clearly illustrated, Libya after Gaddafi remains a very dangerous and unstable place for U.S. interests. But the interests of U.S. companies in Libya, especially, of course, oil companies, are significant. And the administration will look for ways to encourage investment, not just in Libya's oil and gas sector, but its banking, agriculture, infrastructure, healthcare sectors as well, as a means of trying to essentially lift the economic health of the society.
How activist do you expect President Obama's second term trade agenda to be?
I wouldn't think of it so much as activist, so much as perhaps opportunistic. Increased investment and investment-friendly policies will be the carrot, and sanctions and trade remedy actions will be the stick, but all will be directed to furthering critical U.S. policy goals, including things like containing Iran, Syria and North Korea, while fostering growth and development in the emerging democracies, and of course all while balancing our critical relationship with China. Look also for perhaps the thawing of U.S. relations with Cuba, finally, as the transfer of power from the Castro family to a new generation of leaders looks inevitable. So it should be a very interesting 4 years.
Thanks, Scott. It is sure to be an interesting 4 years, and we look forward to capturing your insights again soon.